Hey, this is David Schultz, audio producer here at Bloomberg Tax. Just wanted to let you know we've created a couple new ways for you to interact with us. If you have feedback on this episode or any of our other podcasts, please give us a call and leave us a voicemail at 703-341-3690. That's 703-341-3690. We might just use your comments in a future episode. We would love to hear your thoughts. From Washington, this is Talking Tax. So this may be a little unpleasant, but try to remember last spring. It was the very beginning of the pandemic here in the US, and it honestly felt like the world was ending. Businesses were shut down across the country, and people were staying in their homes to avoid spreading COVID-19. In response to this emergency, Congress passed the CARES Act, and one of the most significant parts of that bill was the creation of the Paycheck Protection Program. This was a program run out of the Small Business Administration that gave out loans to help companies cover payroll expenses during the pandemic. If the companies met certain conditions, those loans could be fully forgiven. To avoid a wave of layoffs and bankruptcies, this program needed to start giving out these loans fast, like really, really fast. And that put a ton of pressure on Bill Briggs, who was at that time the head of the SBA's Office of Capital Access. Briggs is in the private sector now, having left the government earlier this year, and he spoke to Bloomberg Tax's David Hood about the wild, sleepless days of getting this nascent government program up on its feet. David started off by asking Briggs about an anecdote that he'd heard that the first PPP loans went out the door just 2 weeks after the CARES Act was signed into law.
I wish we had 2 weeks. It was actually a week from when Congress passed the CARES Act on March 27, 2020, and when the first paycheck protection loan was processed by SBA on Friday morning, April 3rd. So we had just about a week, if that, maybe even a hair less if you're looking closely at the timeframes, to fully create this program. And when I say we mean SBA in consultation with the Treasury Department, create the appropriate application forms, the program guidance, a communications plan as much as possible. We had to train our SBA field staff who were getting inundated with over 12,000 phone calls a day. And it was a very intense time. And we had all of these people demanding information, but at a certain point, we just had to focus on actually creating the work and the forms and the rules that would guide the program and the systems ultimately too, to start processing these loans on April 3rd at 9 a.m. on Friday morning. I'll never forget it.
Before April 3rd, in that week, what were your expectations? Did you expect that there was going to be high demand? Did you expect that you were going to have such interest in the program and the agency itself?
I think it actually helps to jump a step back even before that. It started in kind of early March. There was already interest in SBA because of the Economic Injury Disaster Loan Program, or EIDL. It was the first time in the history of the country that all 56 states and territories were declared a disaster area and therefore could access the EIDL program. So there was always tremendous demand and claims on information and resources from SBA at that point by April 3rd. But also then too, as Congress kind of got going and what ultimately became the CARES Act, the level of money had been slowly increasing. At first it was $50 billion, and then it was $350 billion. So we kind of understood that it was just going to increase by orders of magnitude, both the strain and the request of what was ultimately made of SBA. So I think every day it just got more and more intense, basically from the middle of March onward. And then for the first 3 months after that PPP was launched, it was just 20-hour days, no sleep, and endless work by a lot of people.
I know that the first round money ran out pretty quickly. Was that, did you anticipate that?
I think we weren't at SBA thinking how quickly the money was going. In a sense, we were trying to make sure that we were giving our lending partners enough to start processing, or you know, having borrowers apply and then send loans to SBA for processing. Again, because this was a joint project with the Treasury Department and they really played a key role, their economists, including a gentleman named Michael Falkender, was a key part of this, had kind of estimated the overall small business demand to be in the hundreds of billions of dollars, but we weren't really sure how fast the money was gonna go. I don't know if we had a conversation that first day or two, but then after, when we started doing our $20 or $30 billion, we were estimating how quickly the money was gonna go, and it was quickly the unprecedented demand and near panic among borrowers and lenders because of the economic downturn. Really just the demand was out the door.
Was there a sense of panic within the agency too? I mean, how much did the outside chaos sort of inform what was going on as you were trying to, you know, get cash out the door?
I mean, I don't know if we were panicked. We were stressed and focused. In some ways, that helped us focus. The administrator had ordered sort of a reorganization of the entire personnel within that first April month. And so we had regional administrators come in, very talented senior officials across the agency to help advise. We had some extremely smart people who were part of this effort. And so there was a lot of work and a lot of frustration, but I don't know if we were panicked. It was just nonstop. And I think, you know, after a few weeks, you can only go on so long. Everybody kind of had their moment of frustration, but generally the team did very well. And, you know, that also goes for the Treasury team. It was truly, you know, so these people really stepped up and were focused on doing everything they could to help small business.
A year later, you're no longer working for the agency, no longer the government, but you left in January. So how did it turn out? Like, what lessons has the agency learned?
Well, I mean, you know, I think that that's an ongoing discussion, and here's why. We are talking right now in early June. At the end of May, the PPP program officially ended the origination part, meaning no loans will be made. However, the forgiveness process is really beginning in earnest, and so the program is not fully done. This forgivable loan program is really kind of a new concept for SBA. However, I think, you know, there'll be a lot of debate about lessons learned and what could have been done. But I think, you know, overall, for an agency whose budget was essentially less than $1 billion in December 2019 to then process over $1 trillion worth of financial assistance within a year and hit the majority of small businesses or support the majority of small businesses in the country. Again, in the, you know, there's probably employees and contractors in less than 10,000 people doing this. It was a phenomenal job. And so I think that is something that really there are people who to this day who started back in February, March of last year have really not had a break and are doing a tremendous job and continue and will do so during forgiveness. But I'm sure there'll be plenty of lessons learned and 1,000 PhD dissertations launched after this program formally ends.
I'm sure. Yeah, I'm sure. There was a lot of criticism of the agency and the program for leaving out businesses that were severely impacted. Like you said, that generally it did a good job. Like, it did what it needed to do. I mean, we've seen billions released, but there's still a lot of small businesses and the smallest businesses that were most impacted. Is there anything that the agency could have done and can still do for those businesses?
Well, we need to again look back at what was happening in March of 2020, where there was discussion of 25% unemployment. Department of Labor data showed a 4.4% unemployment rate in March 2020, and in April 2020 had gone to 14.8%. And so there was talk of another Great Depression, not recession, depression. And what the Paycheck Protection Program was originally designed to do was help small businesses support their employees so they would not go on unemployment. It was to prevent mass unemployment. And if you look at the unemployment data, it clearly did that. So there was an initial focus on supporting those businesses with employees to prevent mass unemployment. And in that instance, it clearly worked. And one thing too we forget is part of that is that because those people were not unemployed, there weren't the economic dislocation effects that happen with unemployment. And you can look back at things that happened in the past. When there's unemployment, a lot of bad things seem to follow after that. It becomes a vicious cycle of unfortunately for a lot of people, once they lose their jobs, in terms of despair, ultimately leading to deaths of despair. So I think in that sense, it clearly worked. And then this year, there was a tremendous focus with trying to help sole props and independent contractors as well. And I think that has been a successful effort. They've done more loans this year. SBA has processed more loans from this round in January 2021 through the end of May than they did last year. And the vast majority of these loans, I think 95%, went to employers with less than 20 employees. And so they were really helping some of those independent or smaller sized businesses. However, the original intent of the program was clearly to prevent mass unemployment, and it did so.
That's what's called a paycheck protection program.
Right.
These loans were major targets of fraud. We've seen some fun stories about folks getting loans and then going and buying expensive cars and things of that nature. What, if anything, could the agency have done to stem those examples of fraud?
Everybody knows about Lamborghini guy in Florida, and the reason we all know that story is for a lot of reasons. But what they don't know is actually what happened on the background, which is the lender noticed inappropriate spending with sophisticated tracking and referred that person to law enforcement, and that person was caught. And because of the sunshine laws that are in Florida, we were able to find out about that. And so we continue to hear stories of people who have abused the program, blatantly falsified documents, lied to their lenders, and lied ultimately to the government and to the American people. I have no doubt that these people, a lot of them are going to jail and suffering severe financial penalties. And moreover, too, they will not be able to access future government programs or federally backed programs, including student loans, and they could have their taxes reclaimed and all of that. I do think that there obviously are people who always seek to take advantage of situations like this, where the government is, essentially saying speed is the most important thing to get money out to calm the markets in terms of the labor and small business markets. We have that in our regular government programs. However, I think that the vast majority, and I don't want to put a percentage on it, but the vast majority of people, from my time when I saw, they were focused about making sure they were using the program the right way and that they would not be investigated. And so I think there are going to be a lot of lessons learned about what could have been done. But I think overall, borrowers, lenders, and SBA and Treasury were really focused on trying to help people. And people were trying to play by the rules. And I know, because I was getting all those inquiries about what do we do in this situation? How do we do it the right way? I think that is, it's not as sexy as the Lamborghini guy, but it's the reality.
You talked about speed being the priority, and I certainly remember back in March and April, sort of wondering if all the businesses around me are going to close, and there's definitely that sort of panic. But at the same time, it did take quite a while for some of these smallest businesses, especially in the first round, to access money, to find a lender, to get the money and all that. Is there anything going forward? Is there anything that the agency can do to prioritize some of those businesses in sort of the beginning?
Yeah. No. I first of all, I think we were. Not just with PPP, but ultimately SBA had 8 or 9 forms of financial assistance for small business. PPP, EIDL, EIDL Advance, Targeted EIDL Advance, debt relief on regular SBA loans. There was a variety of programs and measures implemented, not just PPP, to help small businesses. To say that the smallest of small businesses didn't benefit at some point is just not the reality, particularly some of the things. However, I think it's also the changing nature of work, obviously, with the gig economy and some of the you know, just the reality of how the workforce is changing. More people seem to be working for themselves or in that similar capacity these days. And you know, that I think that will take some of the or should be part of the policy considerations going forward.
You know, taking a step back, should SBA be an agency that plays a major role in future crises?
Absolutely. I think that SBA has shown itself the ability to work under tremendous strain. However, I think that one of the takeaways is that there's a tremendous opportunity to reimagine the mission of SBA, to provide it ultimately with resources. I'm sort of a right of center guy saying, listen, the public awareness of SBA is through the roof. When I was there for the first 2 years at SBA, we were trying to help make SBA stop become the best kept secret. That was then Administrator Linda McMahon's effort. She's a marketing genius, and she said, we have to stop this from being the best kept secret in the federal government. There's a lot of low and no cost services for small businesses. I just, again, think that, you know, a lot of new jobs are created through small businesses, almost half of the GDP. There's a tremendous opportunity for Congress to reimagine SBA, provide it with appropriate resources, and think about how it wants to work with the small businesses of the future, particularly those with a focus on technology, and also just sort of what these new businesses may need, given how they're formed and all of that.
Yeah. Now, talking about PPP, should it become a model for future economic recessions, and should it be a sort of permanent fixture in the government to support small businesses?
I think something like it should certainly be part of the arsenal. I think one of the lessons of the takeaways is over the last 12 years, we've had two massive economic shocks. We had the Great Recession, you know, at the beginning of the decade, essentially. And then now we had the pandemic at the end of or the beginning of this decade. And I think the lesson learned there is almost similar to how we had a national homeland security strategy after 9/11 that the Bush administration put together. I think we should start really thinking about resiliency in the small business sector, and how both the public and private spheres can be a part of that. I do think that you know, risk transfer, including using some of the capital markets and or insurance markets, could be a solution. If you recall, from August to December of last year in 2020, there was a delay for Congress approving more funds. And during that time, we don't have an estimate of how many small businesses may have been impacted by that delay, but we do know how many small businesses ultimately got a second draw loan or more PPP funding in this instance. In January, from January on, there was still tremendous demand. But how do you ensure a dedicated revenue stream for something like PPP going forward, I think is something that smart people should really consider and think about. You know, unfortunately, we're hearing more and more about ransomware and cyber attacks. Again, that's another example of that could cripple small business. And so how are we thinking ahead to if we needed to an emergency situation where government was essentially one of the key resources, how are we doing that intelligently, leveraging the private sector and, you know, taking the best of both worlds, which I think PPP did. PPP provided the stability of the federal government with the efficiency of the private sector. And ultimately, that is why I think it was able to, in the first month, distribute over or process nearly $500 billion worth of loans in 30 days.
That was Bill Briggs, the former head of the Small Business Administration's Office of Capital Access, speaking to Bloomberg Tax's David Hood. You can find up-to-the-minute news on the latest tax and accounting developments at our website, news.bloombergtax.com. That website, once again, is news.bloombergtax.com. And if you want to get in touch with us about this or anything else, our handle on Twitter is @tax, just that, @tax. Talking Tax is produced by myself, David Schultz. Patrick Ambrosio is our editor, and our executive producer is Josh Block. From Washington, I'm David Schultz. Thanks for listening.
For our next season of Uncommon Law, we're looking at the regulatory future of big tech.
The giants need to be broken up. Facebook, Google, all of them.
Is big tech impinging on your right to free speech?
They've had unchecked power to censor, restrict, edit, shape, hide, alter.
Misinformation, disinformation. It's like a big Venn diagram.
We do not want to become the arbiters of truth.
We're calling this series Unchecked. Just search for Uncommon Law wherever you get your podcasts.